Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Senate is still making its way through amendments to the big budget bill President Trump once passed. Republican leaders searching for ways to secure more support for the package of massive tax breaks and huge cuts to Medicaid. Family members of the man accused of killing two Idaho firefighters, 20-year-old Wes Rowley, had wanted to be a firefighter himself, they say. ABC's Jim Ryan has more on what we're learning about the ambush.
Evidence suggests that Rowley used a flint to spark a blaze and draw firefighters onto Canfield Mountain. Rowley eventually killed himself, and Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris says,
"We have not been able to find any manifesto."
Rowley's landlord tells the AP that it wasn't ideology, but mental illness that drove the 20-year-old to commit a murder-suicide.
Brian Koberger, the man accused of killing four University of Idaho students in 2022, has agreed to take a plea deal and is expected in court tomorrow, where a guilty plea will be entered. His trial was set to begin in just a few weeks. This is ABC News.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. On Monday, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources announced that a sharp-tailed grouse hunt will be held for the first time since 2018. According to a press release, the hunting season will be held from October 18th to November 9th. Interested hunters can apply for entry into a limited drawing lottery until August 1st. DNR officials say years of conservation efforts have helped the sharp-tailed grouse population grow enough to support the hunt. More information can be found on the Department of Natural Resources sharp-tailed grouse hunting webpage. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is warning residents of increased enforcement on the water during July 4th weekend. The agency says they will join law enforcement authorities for the annual Operation Dry Water campaign, which seeks to prevent boaters from operating while impaired across the country. Alcohol consumption is the leading contributing factor in recreational boating fatalities nationwide. The Operation Dry Water campaign encourages everyone out on the water to remain sober for their own safety and the safety of other boaters. The Shell Lake Chamber of Commerce is inviting area residents to one of their biggest fireworks shows ever this week. The event will begin at 8 p.m. on Thursday with some live music and local vendors on Main Street. The fireworks show will start at around 10 p.m. and this year will include fireworks launching from three pontoon boats on the water. The live music will return after the fireworks show until around midnight. Organizers are recommending that residents settle anywhere along the beach and hillside in front of the pavilion for a good view of the fireworks. A former Rice Lake woman accused of vehicular homicide in relation to a crash that killed 71-year-old Ira Luplow of Menominee has entered a not guilty plea to the charge. The crash occurred on August 14th on Highway 53. According to Barron County court documents, 56-year-old Patricia Cronquist is accused of trying to pass vehicles in a construction zone before crashing into an oncoming vehicle driven by Luplow. She was charged with felony homicide by negligent operation of a vehicle and entered the not guilty plea in a court appearance on Friday. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Bucks making moves in free agency. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks have agreed to bring back three of their players, guards Gary Trent and Kevin Porter, and forward Taurean Prince, all three agreeing to two-year deals to stay in Milwaukee, with the second year being a player option. But the Bucks are losing their center, Brook Lopez. He'll sign a two-year contract with the LA Clippers. Lopez became a team leader during his 7 years with the Bucks.
Whatever happens, you know, whatever I do, just having a positive influence on the game. You know, that was my main thought. Having fun, but having a positive influence on the game, a positive impact.
Baseball, the Brewers taking on the Mets tonight in New York. The Crew coming off that 4-3 loss Sunday to the Rockies in 11 innings.
Extras are extras, but I mean, everyone in here was fired up to get a chance to walk it off, you know, so I don't think it's really hard necessarily to get back in the dugout and try to rally guys up because everyone's still chomping at the bit.
That's the Brewers right fielder Sal Frelick with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear. We'll drop to the low 60s for a low. Tomorrow, sunshine with a slight chance of a late day thunderstorm at a high in the mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 59.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app, Maggie Dawn.
On the next show, what happens if 20 million people lose their health insurance? Kristen Krall from Fair Share America joins Maggie to talk about the Stop the Billionaire Giveaway bus tour.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Tuesday morning. We made it to July. July 1st, 2025. Parker Olson standing by in Madison Studio A2. Brittany Merlot is off today. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Lincoln County dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser. And it was not a great week last week for farmers. Only, what, 2.5, 3.5 days of field work because of all the rain. But in other news related to food and farming, you know, there is still this trade war that President Trump has, you know, waged on other nations. These are far from done deals. We just haven't heard much about them lately. But apparently the Trump administration has just figured out that maybe these across-the-board tariffs aren't working, because the whole point was to bring things back to America, you know, bring certain crops back, bring manufacturing back, things like that. There are certain things you can't grow in this country that we get elsewhere. And so we'll talk about that brilliant revelation on the behalf of Trump's ag secretary. Coming up. Let's see. No Brittany here, but I'm sure we've got notes from Rob and Tigerton. Sure enough, they're on YouTube. Good morning from Tigerton. Lots of sun and 63 degrees. Another busy day mowing lawns in the Tigerton area, getting plenty of sun too. I've got to go see the eye doctor July 16th in Wittenberg. He mows lawn and plows snow at the Tigerton post office. And in the winter, he always thinks of the postal workers, because we mentioned today is National Postal Workers Day. He said, yesterday I heard Debbie Harry's song "The Tide Is High" from 1980 on the radio, and you have to have Kristen Lyerly singing that song sometime. All right, we will do that. Debbie Harry turns 80 years old today. We were talking in the last hour about the newly announced budget deal for the state budget that Governor Evers and legislative Republicans reached yesterday. We went through some of the details. Cassandra writes on YouTube, this is better than I was expecting. I never thought they'd give money to childcare. And that's true. There will be some significant funding to childcare, not exactly what the governor wants. But we've reached out to Corrine Hendrickson from New Glarus, who's been a leading advocate for childcare support in the state budget, and she is going to join us in just over 10 minutes to give us her reaction to the child care portion of the budget, and also tell us what questions remain to be answered. I mean, there are still other details that have to be announced on this state budget plan. And we'll review those again in our next hour with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, who will join us at about 8:30 to talk about what's going on there. We'll talk a little bit more about the state budget deal in just a moment, but first I wanted to remind you that you can sign up for our daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. And, of course, you can follow us on our website as well. One of the website feature articles this week is about swimming in the summertime and some common Wisconsin lake hazards. After all, with temps that were pushing 90 recently and will be again this week, a trip to the lake might sound like the perfect time to cool off, but you'll find in our article some advice on protecting kids from drowning hazards, avoiding E. coli contaminated waters, lower the chance of parasites causing swimmer's itch, and how to spot that blue-green algae, which can be harmful to humans and especially to pets. Search for lake hazards on our website to find the article. And make sure to check out the link at the bottom of the article to one of our top weekend road trip stories, 7 great places to see waterfalls around Wisconsin. Parker, you ever, in all your swimming and beach time, ever get swimmer's itch?
I am not much of a swimmer at all, Pat, actually. So, okay, no. Okay. Can't say I've had the itch.
I haven't. I had it like 2 times as a kid, maybe at ages, 9 and 10 or something like that. And I don't even know what they do it for it these days, but back then, it was something called, was it calamine lotion, something like that, and you had to pour some of that into a bath, and you had to just lay in there for the longest time, and even then, it still didn't work. You were just itching and scratching like crazy, and I'm surprised, they keep yelling at you, don't itch. They should put like the cone of shame, on your hands.
Yeah.
To stop you from doing that. Anyway, so to avoid swimmer's itch, read that article and some tips about making sure that you are swimming safely. Also on our website, 10 Wisconsin homes that have been featured on HGTV. So take a look at that. So we went through some of the details of the state budget in our last hour, and I realized, hold on, back to the comment section here. Alicia, I got swimmer's itch from a hotel pool. I got one reaction to that, Alicia. Ew. Because to get swimmer's itch from a hotel pool tells me they didn't do a good job of cleaning that pool, and I'm just going to leave it at that. All right, back to the state budget deal. Again, the governor announced not just the increase in funding for the UW system and for child care, but I neglected to give details on what the governor says is a nearly $1.4 billion increase in spendable revenue for K-12 schools across the state. And that word spendable is very important because in the last budget and prior to that, Republicans had this great little budget trick that they would play. They would say, we are giving, I'll just grab a number here, $1 billion, whoop, knocked my microphone, we're giving $1 billion to schools. Well, they weren't really. They were giving $1 billion that was supposed to go to schools, but schools have these state-imposed revenue limits. They can't exceed the limits. So the money comes into schools on paper and goes right back out to schools to property tax relief. And that's fine. Just call it property tax relief. But, don't say, oh, yeah, we gave all this money to schools when it was not spendable money for the schools. This does have a $1.4 billion increase in spendable revenue. It's an increase in what's called categorical aid. Oh, Pat, what's categorical aid? Okay, there's base state aid that everybody gets, and then there's categories of additional aid for things like special education, transportation, libraries, things like that. All vary from school district to school district, but those categorical aids are just another form of state support for our local schools. And the net increase in all those categorical aids, according to the governor, is 5 times larger than the increase in the last budget. And it is a 60% increase above what Republicans on the Budget Committee had previously approved. There is also this big increase in special education reimbursement. Local school districts will receive 42% reimbursement in the first year, 45% reimbursement in the second year of the budget for their special education costs. It is the highest reimbursement rate in 30 years. And a larger increase for special education than the last 3 state budgets combined. There's also $2 million in operations for the Department of Public Instruction after Republican lawmakers had previously voted to cut 10% of the agency's operating costs through the state budget process. So there's a lot there for K-12. There's a lot more for the UW system. And again, Bear in mind, Republicans wanted to cut funding for the UW system, even with a $4 billion surplus, because they wanted to punish universities for being woke. And remember, what's our definition of woke on this morning program? Woke means, you know, don't be a bigot. Don't be a racist. Don't be a misogynist. Don't be a jerk. That's the definition of woke. I don't know why people seem to be against that, but that's all it is, folks, bottom line. Anyway, there will be an increase to the UW system, an increase of $256 million over the next 2 years. That includes over $100 million to help stabilize the system after recent campus closures and layoffs and program cuts and consolidations, in order to ensure that UW campuses remain hubs for the workforce and for the local economies all across the state. There will be $54 million to retain and recruit faculty and staff in high-demand fields to make sure that the UW stays competitive and a world-class institution. There will be $94 million to increase wages for UW system workers, including faculty and staff. Recall how in the last budget cycle, Republicans held pay raises hostage until diversity, equity, and inclusion positions could be eliminated or repurposed, I guess you'd say. There's $7 million there to provide 24/7 virtual telehealth mental health services to nearly all students across UW system campuses. So that's $7 million for mental health care for UW, and I believe it was $30 million for mental health initiatives at K-12, is again a recognition that mental health care for our kids overall, you know, including as they're going to college, is in dire need. For whatever reason you want to lay out there, our students and our children are in need of services that they're currently not getting in the classroom or getting at home. And so it's nice to see that is being recognized and supported. And then there's all kinds of capital projects in here for the UW system. A lot of this is normally handled by the State Building Commission, but I think Republicans and the governor said, well, as long as we're at the negotiating table, let's bang some of these things out. And that would include replacing an addition at Polk Learning Commons at UW-Oshkosh, finished construction of the Prairie Springs Science Center at UW-La Crosse, and demolish Crawley Hall, which lacks fire suppression. There will be money to renovate the Health Sciences and Northwest Quadrant Complex at UW-Milwaukee to transform former hospital buildings into a health sciences hub. They will renovate and put a new addition on DeJope Residence Hall at UW-Madison. There will be a renovation and building an addition to Century Hall at UW-Stevens Point. Renovations at UW-Milwaukee's Sandberg Hall East Tower. A new addition at the UW-Stout Recreation Complex. A dining hall renovation at UW-Madison, a demolition and relocation of a humanities building at UW-Madison, and also money for UW-Madison's Science Hall, which was originally built in 1887 and will undergo a renovation to restore the building's historic character, it says, while improving accessibility, addressing maintenance issues, and adding an atrium. These are investments in our education. These are the things that are going to keep people here, keep our best and brightest here. Far too many people decide to go to college somewhere else, and then they settle down somewhere else, and we lose them. If we don't make investments like that, we continue to lose them. The amount of people inflow coming in, people like me, who came from Minnesota, went to UW-Eau Claire, married a cute farmer's daughter from Manitowoc, and settled here, that number's a lot lower. We need to be improving that number, but you're not going to do it if you're punishing education and higher education in the state. So, again, you have to tip your cap to Governor Tony Evers for dragging some Republicans kicking and screaming toward the realization that we're paying these tax dollars. Let's make the investments that are going to grow the economy, and you do that by attracting our young people, attracting our best and brightest, attracting people from other states, and not continually trying to drive them away. All right, we've got two guests to squeeze in our next segment. There, some of you will get a local update. Others are going to visit quickly with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander and Corrine Hendrickson to talk about child care counts and support for it in the next state budget. Live from Lake Wissota, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Distinguished television journalist Bill Moyers died June 26th at age 91. In his long career, he earned 30 Emmy Awards, served as President Lyndon Johnson's press secretary, and was a stalwart voice for democracy and democracy reform. On being a reporter, Moyers told a Chautauqua Institution audience in 2016, "I was hooked, and in one way or another, I've continued to engage the issues of money and power, equality and democracy over a lifetime spent at the intersection between politics and journalism." From 1964 to 1967, he served as Johnson's press secretary during the passage of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. He was instrumental in the creation of public broadcasting, where he later reported for almost a decade. He wrote scores of commentaries for CBS and NBC and produced 70 documentaries for PBS. Democracy and democracy reform appears frequently in Moyers' work, including his Moyers on Democracy podcast and a companion book of speeches. When Moyers retired in 2017, he wrote, "Please remain vigilant and engaged as citizens in the civic and political life of your community and our country. Democracy is fragile, and no one can say with certainty that it can withstand the manifold risks to which it is now exposed." We've linked to his farewell essay and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down at our new clinic in Hudson. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Hudson. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Milwaukee Brewers were off yesterday. They are in New York to take on the Mets. Three night games tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday evening. Pre-game starts at 5:35 on several stations across the Civic Media Radio Network, so tune in there as the Brewers are two games back of the Cubs and hoping to make some moves this week. All right, we will visit with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 WJFW in Rhinelander in just a bit, and then we'll hold him over the break to visit with Hans Breitenmoser as well, coming up after 7:30's Midwest Farm Report. But first, let's check in with Corrine Hendrickson from Nuglaris, a child care provider, a leading voice on making sure that state and federal funds don't run dry to support child care providers. The pandemic relief funding is running out, and folks were looking for state support. Republicans didn't want to give it, but Corrine, it's in there. $110 million broken up in a few different ways, and I know that you've only just seen parts of this budget deal, but thanks for joining us. And what are your very first impressions until you learn more?
So I am happy we got $110 million. That is huge. However, the fact that it's only for the first year is decimating, and it's going to be a huge problem next year. And the reason for that is it continues the status quo. So we still are not going to be able to hire teachers. We're not going to be able to raise wages. We are not going to be able to make the improvements that we needed. And that's why we asked for more. And secondly, this money will run out then in June of 2026. The way our legislative calendar runs is that next March, they gavel out to go campaign, which means there is zero chance of us getting any dollars until they come back in January. And and it will be facing the exact same thing we are right now, only we'll be more tired. So the few chats I've had this morning with some people is many of them were thinking about retiring for family childcare, and we're going to hold on for like 2-3 more years if we got the funding. However, now that it's only 1 year, they will be done next year. I talked to people who have young children of their own in family childcare, and they were going to try and stick it out and would have stayed once their youngest went to school. They will now be done next summer. So all we're doing is pushing it down the road a year.
I wonder if, and I have no information that tells me one way or the other, but I wonder if in doing this, like you noted, they will gavel out probably in March of 2026 and go campaign. But they're going to have to campaign on the issue of childcare funding that just ran out. And I wonder if that actually doesn't increase the pressure that somewhere between next January and next March, they throw another supplemental amount in there. Again, it's not nearly the stability of putting the budget in, but it does seem like an interesting opportunity to pressure some of these lawmakers early next year as well.
Yeah, it would be an interesting opportunity. However, it's been 5 years of this and we're all really, really tired. I don't know how many of us are just going to decide between now and then we're done, because we can't keep going at this rate, especially if, you know, we work really hard to get people into office that said that they would do these things for us and that they would fight for this. And then to have it be so short-sighted that it ends like with no chance. So the next ask now is to have that standalone legislation passed to get the rest of the money in. And some of the other things that I saw in the press release, some good things, they're increasing the subsidy so that it's up to the legal requirement right now for based off of this year's rates. However, when our rates go up, we'll be back in compliance. So they didn't add enough to actually make it go forward to get into compliance and remain in compliance. They did it in order to backfill to then say we're in compliance right now. Another really good thing I saw was that they're going to be adding, in addition to the Young Star bonus for children on subsidy, if you are higher rated, there will also be a separate bonus for children that are infants and toddlers, so that we would get a little bit more for them. And that's a good thing, because we can't charge enough for those infants and toddlers. And that might help with some of that infant toddler squeeze that we're feeling. So those are some good things I saw. I have a couple questions about the 4K school readiness piece. If it's at the 0.6 full-time equivalent that the schools have, we can't compete with that. If free all day school, 0.6 for us, parents aren't going to be able to pay us the difference, especially since we're not getting the stabilization funding that we need in order to reduce our tuition. So that's really not probably going to do what it's intended to do. I have some major concerns about the ratios changing, pilot programs, and the devil's in the details. I have asked. I got a little bit of clarification from the Department of Children and Families, but they know about what we do. They haven't seen the language, so they don't actually know. Same thing, 16-year-olds counting as a teacher in a classroom is also very, very, very concerning.
Corrine Hendrickson with a first look at reaction to the budget deal that was reached yesterday. Obviously more to learn and then more to react to. But Corrine, thanks for a first pass at it. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great day. Hey, let's bring in Dan Hagen now from WJFW Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. And we'll visit a little bit more when Hans Breitenmoser is here after the break as well. How's Mr. Hagen today?
Mr. Hagen is doing well. Life is good here in Rhinelander. I just wanted to share a little bit from Nicolet College. Nicolet College is the community college, the technical college here in Rhinelander. And we did a story with them about how they could be affected by this one big, beautiful bill. So in the House version of the bill, they have changed the language for Pell Grants, and that Pell Grants would only be applicable to people who are attending college full time. And many, probably most, nearly all of the students at Nicolet College are attending part-time because they have jobs and families and that sort of thing. So that is just one thing that we're looking out for right now, because that would be pretty much most of their students.
Yeah, I recall seeing that there was a lot of controversy about the Pell Grant language, and I was just looking quick to see if I've seen any update on it, and I have not yet. What I have seen is that they have actually stopped voting in the Senate. They're just doing a pointless roll call, still trying to get the vote of Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, because their first, you know, little sweetheart deal fell through, so they're trying something else. Must be a nice gig to have, you know, if you can get it, trying to get your arm twisted, you know, for a budget deal. But, you know, you got to watch out for the the Pell Grant recipients there, and I don't know if they're going to do that. Dan, hang around. Thanks for your patience. Sure. I know you're dying to get out there and go. Is it snowshoeing? You had snowshoe softball before.
So right? Roller skiing. The Birkebeiner is only 200 days away, so I got to stay trained.
Of course you do. All right, so he's going to be back after the break along with Lincoln County dairy farmer Hans Brighton Moser. That's all coming up next here on These Mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlum.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Consumers' concerns over food ingredients, things like red dye, driving another market here in Wisconsin. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Tuesday. The Food Finance Institute's taking a closer look at what can be done within our borders to supply food businesses with natural products that provide the same flavors and the same colors. It's the job of Jamie Valenti Jordan, the food brand program manager with the Food Finance Institute.
Naturally Wisconsin is part of a larger organization called Naturally Network. Naturally Network is a kind of an expression of this need to partner together in order to support the natural products industry, most commonly in the food industry, honestly. And so what Naturally Wisconsin is intended to be is an opportunity for us to bring all of the resources that are here to support both our farmers and our entire supply chain through the natural products ecosystem to help us to be better partners, better business partners.
Jamie Valenti Jordan is the executive director of Naturally Wisconsin. He said ultimately their goal is to make Wisconsin the best place to launch and scale business in the natural sector. You can find out more about their efforts at naturallywisconsin.org.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empower Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVet's Bovine Goldlight to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Goldlight keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Goldlight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And speaking of local food, Wisconsin Farmers Union expressing their displeasure that the Joint Finance Committee has removed funding for the Wisconsin Local Food Purchase Assistance Program. This program is something that's currently being funded by federal dollars that will be exhausted by the end of August. According to Wisconsin Farmers Union, they say that that program is a win-win for farmers, food access organizations, and communities. More at MidwestFarmReport.com on that story and others. I'm Pam Yonke.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear. We'll drop to the low 60s for a low. Tomorrow, sunshine with a slight chance of a late-day thunderstorm at a high in the mid-80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 61.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, can I ask a
front seat. Just this one time. Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, breaking down more decisions from Wisconsin Supreme Court with Pat Kreitlow from Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll have State Representative Angela Stroud on Republicans supporting lead water line removal in Superior if they can stick taxpayers with the bill instead of a private utility. We'll also have our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. You're going to love this one. I think Hans should come back for this one. Solar panels in farm fields. Oh, you heard us talk about this with John and Gordy yesterday. Solar panels in farm fields on electric powered tractors so that the cows can stay under the shade of the panel as it slowly rotates through the field where they're grazing. That's in Climate Check tomorrow with Melissa Baldoff. We will also have our weekly visits with our civic media friends Earl Ingram in Southeast Wisconsin, James Kelly in Northwest Wisconsin, Jimmy Cuska in Southwest Wisconsin, and of course Parker and I will have Melissa Kay in Wisconsin Rapids with the latest on her
Pigeon Quest.
I just want to see if Parker was standing by with the Pigeon Quest button, and he was.
I've always got Pigeon Quest ready.
That's so good. Dan Hagen joins us from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. Hans Breitenmoser, Lincoln County dairy farmer from the Merrill area. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great.
All right.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Dan.
Hans, morning. How about you? I know the official crop report said there was 3.5 days of field work available last week because of the rain. Obviously a lot less in some parts. How are things up by you?
Well, pretty wet. Now we've had a couple of dry days here, and we're actually going to start chopping our second crop this morning here in the next few hours. So
yeah, the second crop got chopped here in the field across the street from me yesterday, and I've already marveled previously at, you know, just how big and how fast, you know, this equipment is getting. I swear that thing was moving at least 30, maybe 35 miles an hour down the field. And I, you know, you think of baling hay and you think of just very slowly working your way down, chopping, and not this stuff. Boy, we got like something out of Transformers working the fields out here. And Dan, you're following stories up in Rhinelander, not the least of which are some in Hans's Lincoln County. And, you know, there's a nursing home there we've talked about that may or may not be for sale. But then in Taylor County, not too far away, there's also some kind of drilling project going on over there. What's the latest out of Taylor County?
Yeah, that's right. So Greenlight Metals is this Canadian company, and they are on the Toronto Stock Exchange. They have a subsidiary based in Wisconsin, and they have started drilling in Taylor County at what's called the Bend Deposit. That's near Medford. And there is a lot of gold and copper at that deposit. The issue that is, however, it's using like non-ferrous metallic mining. And more or less, this releases a ton of sulfuric acid. So there's a reason why there is a moratorium on this kind of mining for a long time. That moratorium has been lifted. So this kind of exploratory drilling is the first step toward opening a mine.
Potentially so. And it was a mining moratorium that Tom Tiffany was very instrumental in lifting and exposing this area to all of those harms from, you know, that exact kind of drilling. And not just creating a mine, but I mean, just the experimental drilling itself has potential to cause harm to the groundwater. So it's why people are concerned even about the test drilling that's going on right there. And Dan, of course, is following that out of Rhinelander. Hans, I know you're following things with the Pinecrest Nursing Home sale. We were talking about the county board maybe putting it up for sale. This is not yet a done deal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it ain't over till it's over. The county board here in Lincoln County sold the nursing home once before, and then that deal fell through. After the fact, the county board voted again in favor to sell here to a different company more recently. And that vote went through as a simple majority vote. Now, some people are saying that there should have been a two-thirds vote to make that happen, since it happened outside the regular budget process. But the people in Lincoln County are just concerned about losing our nursing home and losing control of our nursing home. When we ran it ourselves, or when we partnered with North Central Healthcare to run the operations there, we at least had some control over it. My argument against selling it, one of them, is that, you know, once it's sold, we simply lose all control. And the company that has purchased it now, you know, they've got about 340 of these facilities all over the United States. And my argument was, look, you know, even if the people who own this company now are, you know, super and, you know, they're going to treat residents well and treat employees well and so forth and so on, I said, this is big business. And, it, you know, there's no guarantees. I mean, we could see a different ownership, you know, have the thing bought out by a different company in a couple years from now and have the wheels really fall off. So it's confusing to me as to why the county board is choosing to try and sell a nursing home that's a five-star facility that's been doing great financially the last couple of years. It's taking care of our residents and keeping the promise that we've you know, had, the deal that we've had for 70 years in Lincoln County is, if you work hard and you do the right thing, we'll have a place for you when you get old.
So I can see why Dan and everybody at Newswatch 12 is following a story like this, Dan. It's got real human impact. Again, that whole notion of, you know, the benevolent corporation that will always be benevolent, or will it be? I'm sure, Dan, you get reaction every time you do a story about this issue.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I just want to ask you one thing, Hans. You know, you said it's doing well financially, but, you know, we keep hearing that it's losing the county million plus dollars every year. So what do you mean by it's doing good financially?
Well, it's been self-sustaining for the last, oh, I don't know, like year and a half, 2 years. When I was on the county board years ago, it was, you know, there was tax levy dollars that needed to keep it afloat. There's no doubt about that. And we partnered with North Central to help, you know, improve efficiencies and so forth. North Central Healthcare is a consortium Lincoln County works with already. And so it seemed like a good fit. And you know, things turned around. It took a little while, but things turned around. But what I find interesting too, Dan, is that, you know, when through a survey that was done in Lincoln County, when people were asked, would you be willing to help support the nursing home if need be, the resounding answer was yes. So people in Lincoln County are looking at their nursing home and saying, yeah, even if it costs us a couple bucks, we're willing to keep this thing afloat because we see it as important. And we understand that, you know, if we no longer have control over it, we might not have a nursing home at all. And what does that mean for us in, you know, in terms of, you know, when you're elderly parents or what have you have to go to a nursing home, do you want to place them 2 hours from your house? You know, what does that look like? We've got an ideal situation here, but what we also have, I think, is the majority of county board supervisors who came into their role as county board supervisors with sort of this hell-bent philosophical notion that if you know government shouldn't be involved in anything. And they've been unwilling to look past that and look at the facts here on the ground with our particular situation and see that we've got something special here that we should be hanging on to. And in doing so, you know, we create the economy that goes along with it. You know, we can, you know, there's 200 people roughly that work at Pinecrest Nursing Home. If Mega Corporation Incorporated decides that, you know, these dots on their little balance sheets and spreadsheets aren't working out very well from their perch on Wall Street, and they say, yeah, it's time to pull the pin and Merrill, 200 people lose their jobs and we don't have anything to say about it. To me, it's just poor management.
And Pat, you can cut me off if you'd like, but I think the argument from the other side, I heard from Ken Wickham, a county board chair, is, you know, this has been an issue for a long time. A lot of these county board members were up for re-election. They got re-elected, even though their stance on Pinecrest was clear. So what would you make of that argument that they were elected, they can make decisions for the people?
Well, I mean, I agree with that to a point. And I'm not, you know, having been on the county board for 10 years, I don't think that, the, you know, the, the board should rush to referendum for every 98 cent detail. Yes, you have to put your big boy pants on and make some decisions for your constituents. But one of the things with Pinecrest is it's such a big deal. It's such a big deal in our community. And so many people ask so often, just put it to a referendum, you know, get, so we can get the input from, you know, from the people that are impacted from it. And the board refused to take it to a referendum. I think if they would have gone to a referendum, they would have found out that, you know, people want this thing and they're willing to support it. And they want to keep it alive. So I agree with what Ken said. Yes, there was an election. But there's also plenty of evidence to suggest that this is something that people wanted more input on.
You often hear that when it appears that the elected officials, you know, are acting more on their own ideological behalf than on, you know, the will of the majority of their constituents. But again, you know, they're the ones that have to make the decision whether to have that referendum or not. So obviously, Dan's got a lot to follow, and I'm glad you were here to ask some questions of Hans about that. Dan, here's a question or a comment for you on the text line from Jim in Brookfield. Hey, Dan, sounds like a true case of Berkey fever to be roller skiing in July. Good luck reaching the magic number of 20 Berkeys for the purple bib. Again, from Jim in Northfield, because Dan mentioned he's going to go roller skiing after this segment.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim. I will tell you, my father is a birch legger, as it's called. That means 20 Berkeys. He's done about 27. I will be on my 11th or 12th. And, you know, you gotta keep staying active. I just was notified I got dropped a wave. I've been in wave two for a year, but my time was too slow, so I got bumped down to wave three. The goal is to get back up, so putting in the work now.
That's why you lift those weights now. You know, got to be ready for it.
That's right.
Dan Hagen, you can follow what he's doing over at Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. The man's got to get his roller skis on. Thanks for sticking around a little bit longer, Dan. We appreciate it.
Of course. Good to see you, Pat. Good to see you, Hans.
All right. Take care now.
Hans,
I wanted to take a moment with you to talk about the president's trade war, which is still ongoing, even though we don't talk about it quite so much. But specifically this, from the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, has told the Wall Street Journal the Trump administration may consider granting tariff exemptions for goods that are difficult to produce domestically in the United States, like cocoa beans or coffee. Currently, these products are subject to comprehensive tariffs, which have led Democrats to criticize Republicans for driving up consumer costs. In an interview, Rollins says, "Everything is still under discussion at this stage. I believe that for certain products we cannot produce domestically, it's important to fully understand the situation and develop a comprehensive strategy that supports all of these goals." Do you feel congratulations are in place and in order for the Trump White House for discovering the 1920s era song, "Yes, We Have No Bananas"? That we cannot grow bananas or cocoa beans or coffee here in the U.S., so why put on a tariff designed to bring products back here when they were never here in the first place? I think it's great that it only took them 5.5 months to figure this out.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just gives me an abundance of hope, Pat, because if 5.5 months is all that took, then I can hardly wait to see what the next 5.5 months will bring.
Again, it was supposed to be 90 deals in 90 days with 90 nations out there.
I think what we've seen is 90 changes of minds and 90 flips and flops and 5 months of chaos, leaving our trade partners confused, leaving our farmers confused, leaving the Farm Service Agency confused, leaving the markets confused.
Yep. And again, like we had one farmer from Chippewa County saying, you know, is it America first or America alone? And it's tough to tell sometimes. Hans Breitenmoser, thank you for your time as well. Get out in that field. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Ben.
All right. We'll continue things on here with a local update for some of you. Others will be back here. And then in our next hour, Dan Schaefer and Chad Holmes, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety.
CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Coming up 1 hour from now, we will talk to State Senator Jeff Smith from Eau Claire County about the budget deal that was reached late yesterday between Governor Tony Evers and legislative Republicans, and whether it's a good deal for the Chippewa Valley and whether it's something that he feels like he can support. Again, Senator Jeff Smith, 1 hour from now on our mornings, powered by Up North News. And a reminder, you can sign up for our newsletters, upnorthnewswi.com. And there's, of course, our Sunday morning politics newsletter where I gave a little budget update on Sunday as to the status of things. I'm sure that next Sunday will be all about reaction to this budget deal, assuming that it all passes and goes through by the end of this week. We also have a question of the week, and this week it is, who do you think will be the Republican nominee for governor next year? Now, the primary is still well over a year away. It's in August of next year, but we have one announced candidate, Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive. You have two people you remember, you know them, you love them, they're interested in running for governor again, maybe, Tim Michaels and Eric Hovde. Will it be one of those three? Will it be some other person who's currently in elected office, like Congressman Tom Tiffany? Or our fifth choice, will it be just some other rich guy that assumes he can come in with his checkbook and run for governor? So that's our question of the week. You can get that fresh on Sunday mornings by signing up for our Sunday mornings newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. And remember, if you can't listen to us live, take us along with you on demand through Spotify or Apple. We would love to have you as a subscriber. It doesn't mean you have to listen to it every day, but it's just nice to have you think of us amongst all the other podcasts that you're subscribing to, that you might want to catch one of ours. So again, head over to Spotify and subscribe. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has put out a notice that tomorrow it is going to release a decision on the 1849 law that some folks believe constitutes a statewide abortion ban. You'll recall that 3 years ago, when the U.S. Supreme Court repealed Roe v. Wade, and when a radical set of right-wing justices threw the issue back to the states, all 50 states had to look at what was on the books 50 years earlier, right before Roe v. Wade codified a woman's right to control her reproductive health. Well, in Wisconsin, part of that was a law from 1849. In some very arcane language, legalese for 1849, which is even more arcane than legalese from the present day. And I recall reading through it at first and thinking, this isn't an abortion ban. This is, you know, this is about feticide. And I hate to say it, and I know it's a delicate subject, but there have been, you know, plenty of instances where a pregnant woman was beaten by somebody hoping to induce an abortion. And that this law is about that. But some people construe it as an abortion ban. Abortion was not on anybody's radar in 1849, not in the way it is right now with so much political zealotry. And sure enough, once it got into a court challenge, a Dane County judge looked at it and said, that's exactly right. This is not an abortion ban. This is a feticide law. But it's been appealed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and tomorrow they're going to release their determination of the status of that 1849 law. They heard oral arguments back in November. So the state budget deal is the big news of today. The 1849 law decision by the Supreme Court of Wisconsin is going to be the big news tomorrow. Coming up on our website today, upnorthnewswi.com, will be an article about what happens when the state budget is late. Now, again, there was a deal reached late yesterday, but the new budget was supposed to start today. Today is the start of the new fiscal year. What happens? Well, in Wisconsin, it's a little bit different than in other states. There are some states that go into partial shutdowns. There are some states where government operations are stripped down to the very basics and non-essential state workers are furloughed. That's not necessarily the case here. And the article will include comments from State Senator Kelda Royes. I interviewed her yesterday afternoon when I was filling in for Todd Alba on his conveniently named Todd Alba show. And she talked to us about the things that needed to be in a budget deal, which, of course, included child care, UW funding, and making up for years of underfunding public schools. She feared that there would be a budget deal otherwise, where she said, quote, it would continue this horrible cycle where our schools get shortchanged and then property taxpayers have to raise their own taxes to make up the difference to keep our school doors open. And it's even to the point where there is a Wisconsin Homeowners Alliance that's been running TV ads to say, you know, put pressure on your legislators to support a state funding increase, because otherwise local property taxes have to go up. And it seems like more folks are starting to realize that. And that's probably what has led to the budget deal that was announced yesterday. And we're going to talk to Dan Schaefer much more about that coming up. One other budget detail that I'm going to be looking at deals with crime victims and the funding that goes to support them, because the Joint Finance Committee last week approved $20 million in grants for organizations that serve crime victims, $20 million. The State Department of Justice was asking for about $67 million to make up for continued cuts in federal funding that help out with crime victims. There's a lot that's done there to help pay for a broad range of services for crime victims. There's domestic violence shelters. There are crisis hotlines. There are programs that help crime victims figure out how things are going to work in the court system. And Sometimes the money comes from fines and fees when people are convicted of federal charges, but that federal funding has been unstable. And so Attorney General Josh Call was hoping for $67 million. Joint Finance said $20 million. He was blasting them at that decision on Monday. I have not seen whether the funding for crime victims is improved in this budget deal that came out yesterday. I'll take a look during the 8 o'clock news, and we'll see if we can't shine a little light on that portion of a very big budget deal that was reached yesterday. All right, Dan Schaefer's coming up in our next hour along with Chad Holmes. First, a reminder, sign up for those newsletters, plural. Head to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Senate continuing to debate and planning eventually to vote on the Trump budget plan. They have been meeting since 9 a.m. yesterday. ABC's Ali Pekoran.
They're trying to figure out how to corral the conference into passing this legislation. It does not seem at the present moment that Majority Leader John Thune has locked the votes down to get this thing passed. If you look at the Senate floor, he's huddled up in deep conversation with some of these holdout senators. Mainly, we've been seeing a lot of attention poured into Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Vice President J.D. Vance also at the Senate right now. President Trump has left for Florida, where he will tour the detention facility being built in the Florida Everglades. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will visit Washington next week. The jury returning for a second day of deliberations in the Sean Combs sex trafficking and racketeering trial. The jurors talked for 5 hours on Monday and so far have been unable to reach a unanimous verdict. This is ABC News.